Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for Better Call Saul. My name is Mike, and we're doing flashback recollections of Saul as he appeared in different episodes of Breaking Bad. This is episode 12 of season 2, called Phoenix. This episode originally aired on May 24th, 2009. It was written by John Scheiban and directed by Colin Buxey. Saul begins his presence in Breaking Bad in season 2, and he's only in 4 episodes. This is the 4th of those. He does appear in the final episode, ABQ, but only on a telephone call. Saul's role in the show begins to increase, not only with his presence, but with the people that he introduces and the strategies and advice that he suggests to the different people that he's involved with in the show. One of those important characters is Mike Ehrmantraut, and we're going to be introduced to Mike in this episode. And we'll hopefully be seeing Mike in Better Call Saul, which is implied in the early previews and interviews that have been given by the creators of the show. So it would be great. Mike, when I remember when Mike left Breaking Bad, it was one of the lowest points for me. I really liked that character. And it will be great to see him back in this version of the prequel to Breaking Bad. Hopefully we'll get to see him a lot in Better Call Saul. This episode, Phoenix, begins with Walt making the drug drop-off at the location that Victor had specified in the Pollos Hermanos store. Walt's rushing frantically to get there and to get the product unloaded from his car. And while he's going through this, he gets a call from Marie telling him that the baby has been born. So Walt's missed out on the birth of his daughter. And we see him frantically unpack the trunk and get the product out. We don't see the actual handoff or payment, but Walt's most critical moment in his career up to this point is interrupted by probably one of the most critical moments in his life, the birth of his daughter. So while these two points converge, we don't get to see either one. Walt leaves the drug handoff location without us seeing any of the action there. And then he shows up at the hospital, and the baby's already been born. Skylar's holding her, and Ted is there. Ted has helped Skylar get to the hospital for the birth of Holly. Walt gives Ted some uncomfortable thanks. I remember feeling at the time a little bit of dread of what may be to come between Walt and Skylar and Ted. We will eventually get to that in the series, but at this point, it's just a friendly giving Skylar a ride to the hotel, to the hospital. And Walt thanks him as graciously as he can, but it doesn't look good. It looks a little strained between Walt and Ted. So Walt and Skylar look pretty happy with the baby, although Skylar does tell him she wishes he could have been there. And we can, of course, understand that. Walt goes home and puts the money away, and right before he goes in the house, he stops and pauses in the driveway for a minute, and Cranston's going to give us a really great visual of just the change that he's just gone through. He's now a father again, and he's now crossed into this pretty big time version of his criminal career as a drug distributor. He's got this load of cash, and he's sensing a change, and the music and the expression on Walt/Cranston's face as he sits in the driveway. It's only for a few seconds, but it's a pretty distinct transition from the way things were to the way things are going to be. So Walt stashes the money in the wall behind the insulation in the laundry room. Next, we see Jesse and Jane awaken from their drug sleep. Jane wakes up first. She sees that her father has called, and she's late again for another meeting. She lies about being in the shower and being late without anything really bad causing her to be late. And then she mentions to Jesse that somebody broke in. So Jesse checks the kitchen and sees the aftermath of all of Walt's rummaging. And the floor's a mess, the kitchen's a mess. So Jesse pretty much panics, thinking that he's been robbed of his meth. I remember thinking at the time that Jane's pretty cavalier about the door of her property having been smashed through, and just kind of casually mentions that they've been robbed. But Jesse's not very casual. He freaks out when he sees that the meth is gone and starts to panic, and rightfully so. It's the sum of a pretty good amount of work and risk that they've endured so far. At the meeting that Jane and her father are attending, the AA meeting, we see some guy speaking, and he's been struggling of late with his sobriety. But we find out that this guy's just reached a year of sobriety. Jane is fidgeting and fumbling with her token. Obviously, she's fallen off the wagon recently, so it's probably a lot of guilt. She's carrying a lot of lies within herself and between her and her father. Her father's still relatively proud of her. She's sitting next to him and, you know, maintaining this front of being sober. They do go out to eat breakfast, and her dad notices that Jane's super tired looking. She does look pretty rough around the edges at this point. Jane, if you remember, is an artist, and she's designing a tattoo and staying up all night doing it is her excuse for looking a little rough around the edges. Jane's dad asks if she is seeing Jesse, and Jane lies to him and says no. So we see some lies starting to pass around between Walt and Skyler, now Jane and her father. People are starting to break bad. And we'll see soon, either Jane is a good liar or her dad is just a sucker for his baby girl, because he buys into her lies for the most part. Even though he probably knows better, he lets it work on him. Her little daughter of daddy, the magic works, and he probably believes what he wants to believe more so than what he really knows is true. Walt and Skyler are home now with Holly. Their little painting is a nice little homey one of family happiness. However fake or short it's going to last. The phone rings, and Junior answers it, but there's nobody on the other end, and it rings immediately, again, right away, and it's Jesse. Jesse telling Walt that there's been a break-in, and Walt just disgustedly hangs up on him, calling him a junkie and, you know, just dismisses Jesse. And Jesse's actually acted the way that Gus told Walt to be wary of, that he's a junkie, unreliable partner. And Walt, this kind of rings true with Walt at this point. And he just dismisses it all and hangs up on Jesse right away. Jesse's forgotten the interaction with him and Walt, as Walt was looking for the product to take to the drop-off point. And Walt is starting to see that maybe Gus is right, that it's just really bad to have an irresponsible drug addict for a partner. So he just hangs up on Jesse. The next scene, we see Hank bringing Los Pollos chicken dinner over to Walt and Skyler's house. They're having kind of a celebratory dinner with the baby there and Hank and Marie and Junior. And it's one of those happy scenes at the pool. We've seen this pool, or we will have seen it by the time we watch the entire series. The pool hosts some happy parties, some sad parties, and some freaky things that happen at parties. But this is one of the happier ones. Walt is talking to Hank about a pool alarm that sounds off if the baby ever gets in there. And Hank asks if he can buy that for Walt and Skyler. So Skyler talks about going back to work. Skyler's going to keep working due to Walt's scheduled surgery coming up. And Hank makes the dumbass comment, you know, bad joke comment about, because Walt's saying, well, you don't need to work. We can take care of things. And Hank makes this comment about, well, you must have a printing press in the garage printing out 50s. It's one of his stupid, smart comments that he's been known to make throughout this series. But it's very, it's pretty close to being right on. Later on in the night at the White household, the baby starts to cry and Walt attends to her. And then he carries her out to the garage and shows her, or the laundry room, I guess, and shows her and us the money. We get to see the extent of what this money looks like all stacked up in the wall. And Walt explains to Holly, even though she can't hear it or can't understand it, Daddy did this for you. So I remember at this time, too, the first watch way back in 2009, wondering, is this going to be enough? Is this where Walt kind of stops and defends this, and that's where the series is going to go? Or just what? Just what does this money represent? And we see, of course, that this is a fraction of where he eventually goes with this story. But at the time, it looked like a whole lot of money, and it looked like all the answers that Walt was originally seeking. And now that he's got a little bit of health stabilized, his health is back on track, maybe this is the time to take the story another way and just show him managing this and, you know, fending off the problems that might be caused by having so much cash on hand. But alas, we don't see that. We see what we know happens. But we'll get back to that as we get to it in the future episodes of the story. In the classroom, Jesse shows up in Walt's classroom, surprising him, and tells him now that he knows of Walt's series of messages. He knows from the series of messages that Walt took the stash. Back in the earlier scene, I didn't mention that as Jesse was calling Walt and Walt hung up on him, there was an indication on the answering machine that there were four messages. And we know that from the messages Walt had left that Jesse would have been able to figure out that he was coming to get the product to drop it off. So Jesse's figured it out, and he's coming now to confront Walt in his classroom. And Walt, in this conversation with Jesse, is starting to sound like Gus. He is calling Jesse irresponsible and a junkie. He gives Jesse, and subsequently us as watchers, the math. It's $1.2 million. 480K each after Saul takes out his 20% cut. But Walt's not going to give Jesse his share due to the heroin and other drugs he's seen around his apartment. He knows Jesse's high. Jesse claims that he's not high again, so he's lying now too. And Walt confronts that with offering him to take a test, a pee test. And Jesse slams the beaker against the wall and leaves in anger. We're going to see the result of this anger and how Jesse deals with not getting his share in a minute. Thinking back on my first watch of this back in 2009, I remember wondering what Walt was going to do with Jesse's share. But now with the weight of the series, after having seen the whole series, this is a good thing that Walt's doing, I think. He's fatherly now to Jesse. He's keeping that money from him for reasons that do actually benefit Jesse. What happens with how Jesse eventually gets the money is not good, but I think Walt's intentions are great. He is trying to keep Jesse out of trouble, which Jesse at this time seems not in control of how to stay out of trouble, and Walt's doing his best to keep from adding fuel to that fire. At the White household, we see Walt and Marie, or hear them at first, Walt and Marie, talking about the baby and how not to put the baby on her back, instead to put her on her side so she doesn't choke if she spits up a little bit. So here we have Chekhov's sleeping position, Chekhov's baby position, sleeping position to avoid problems with asphyxiation while vomiting. We'll see the results of what happens later on in this episode, but that's the first warning of don't sleep on your back, sleep on your side if you're a heroin addict or a baby. Skyler comes in and tells them to come over and look at Junior's website. He's created the website for Walt about save Walter White and give donations to my dad for his recovery. Marie and Skylar are super proud. Walt, of course, doesn't like the fact that it accepts donations. The website has a PayPal feature where people can donate directly to Walter White, and that money would just come in directly to the White family through their PayPal account. Of course, Walt wants nothing to do with this because it's charity. And, of course, Skylar tells Walt that he needs to be proud of Junior and not criticize him for having this website accept charity. But this goes directly against Walt's Heisenberg side. So here we see Saul. This is the time that we see Saul in this episode. And Walt kind of explains this frustration to Saul. He's got all this money, but he can't do anything with it. He can't spend it. He can't show it to anybody. He can't claim how proud he is to have helped his family. And Saul gives Walt some comedic advice that he needs a gun moll, a girlfriend, a crime girlfriend that he can share this with and show off and go out and have a little fun with. Of course, Walt dismisses this as just stupidity from Saul. But this does lead to an interesting premise that, or not premise, but an interesting angle that Saul can now enter into with the drug dealings of Walt and Jesse. They figure out how to launder the money, and they come up with some crazy ideas at first, like the gun mall girlfriend and Uncle Murray giving it blind luck. He tells Saul about the website, and Saul looks it up on his computer and notices immediately the PayPal feature. Now, the PayPal feature opens a lot of options for Saul to launder this money or have other people launder it. And he suggests funneling money into the website, not in one huge donation, but in thousands of other smaller donations by zombie benefactors. And it turns out Saul knows this hacker in Belarus. I think he calls him a hacker cracker extraordinaire. And zombies, he can set up computers, zombies, that will place 20,000 to 30,000 small donations into SaveWalterWhite.com. Now, I don't know how untraceable PayPal is. It seems that it would be actually very traceable. But I don't know, maybe not. Maybe that would be something that the, as a charity, that the government would not investigate too closely. But Saul says that it's virtually untraceable because of the zombie nature of the computers that would be processing the donations. It didn't interrupt my enjoyment of the episode, and it's interesting to see Saul being creative with his criminal strategy for helping launder this money. Saul's more than a ambulance chasing lawyer. He's a criminal. He's figured out ways to do things illegally that benefit his clients. So he's more than just a criminal lawyer helping people that he knows are guilty. He's actually getting them involved in other guilty activities or criminal activities. Jesse and Jane are doing more heroin. Jane sets up Jesse. She looks like she's taught him now how to do this heroin. And during one of his highs, he tells Jane about the money. In his stupor, he tells her that $480 is owed to him by his partner. And she says, she makes the offhand comment, well, $480, that's a lot of money. And he says $480,000. And that gets Jane's attention big time. And that's going to set up the little tragedy we see here with Jane. It's very much a foreshadowing of what's going to happen later on in this episode. She also puts him on his side. She puts Jesse on his side and not his back. And again, that Chekhov's positioning for, you know, the warning about what you need to do if you're not capable of clearing your airway while you're either high or asleep or an infant. Next, we see Jane's father again at the NA meeting. I've been calling it AA, but it's NA, Narcotics Anonymous. He's there at the meeting again by himself. Jane's not there. He's actually literally got his hand on the empty chair next to him. Jane's not there, so he calls her again. She wakes up again. It's a duplicate copy of the first conversation. The only thing is Jane looks a little bit rougher. She's getting rougher and rougher as she's kind of descending back into drugs here. But she scrambles to get ready and rushes out. She runs out the door. But this time her father is one step ahead of her, and he's there at the on the street waiting for her to come out the door. So he wants to look inside the house. He does. He comes in. He looks around. It's Jesse's side of the duplex. And sees the drug paraphernalia, sees Jesse sleeping in his stupor on the bed. And then this causes him to go into a bit of a tirade. He wakes Jesse up and slaps him around a little bit. And Jesse and Jane's father, Donald, have this confrontation. Of course, Jane's father thinks it's all Jesse's fault for getting Jane involved in this drug adventure. You know, my poor little baby. But, you know, it's actually, if we remember, it's Jane who got Jesse involved in heroin, Jesse didn't do much to keep Jane away from drugs by getting high in front of her. At least he tried, though. At least he tried to send her away. But having Jesse around was too much temptation for Jane. Anyway, this confrontation with Donald and Jane and Jesse causes Jane's father, Donald, to just say, look, this is it. You go back to rehab. You've been clean for a year and a half, and now you're back and, you know, using again. There's no excuses. Absolutely draws the cold final line for her, but she wiggles off the hook. It's the inability of Donald, the father, I think, to really keep his foot down on his baby girl. She can talk him out of it. We'll see how that plays out in the future of this episode, but he can't put his foot down completely and make her go. He does try to call the police. In fact, he calls the police, and ultimately she wears him down, and he hangs up, tells the police it's a mistake, and does not have them come out. But she's been able to manipulate her father, and she does hear one very last time. So all of these events, Jane getting caught, her father knowing she's back on drugs, mixed with this knowledge now that Jesse has this money, puts Jane in a situation where she either has to go to rehab or use this out that she has. And this out is the money, the escape that she can partner up with Jesse and take this big chunk of money and be free, go off and do whatever they want. They start to say that they have the ability to be free, but they have to do it the right way without drugs. But we see the power of addiction here and how it's too strong to not fully escape from the drugs. But we'll get to that in a minute because there's a couple other scenes that happen. Walt and Skylar and Holly are at home and the phone rings. Turns out it's Jane talking to Skylar. She's covering up the reason for her call, but she's asking about a letter of recommendation from a former teacher, Walt being a former teacher. You know, she's setting up this conversation that she needs to have with Walt, or she's covering up for it. So Walt takes the phone and she demands the money. She mentions Hank and drug dealing and blackmail. And Walt realizes that at this point she is trouble and he's going to have to pony up that money to Jesse. And at this point, I remember Walt is really confirmed as being the good guy. And Jane is really confirmed here as the bad guy. Walt is protecting Jesse and Jane is a wild card here at this point. She probably doesn't deserve what's about to happen to her, but Walt, clearly put Walt in the good guy side of this balance here with him keeping Jesse from resources that could get him more deeply involved in drugs. It's also interesting to notice here on the rewatch that Jane has become the crime mall that Saul wanted Walt to have. Jane is the partner in crime for Jesse. She's the criminal girlfriend that Jesse can go off into the sunset with and have his adventures with. I don't know. I drew that parallel on this rewatch that she is essentially a crime mall that Saul had described earlier to Walt. Jesse actually tells Jane that he's guilty about rolling his partner. And Jane puts her foot down and states that she's his partner, not Walt. Jane is Jesse's partner, not Walt. And Jane does literally step into this crime mall role by telling Walt she'll burn him to the ground. It is blackmail. I'll tell the world about your drug dealing and your high school teacher drug dealing with a DEA brother-in-law. So she is about to see the ramifications of that. We see Walt struggle again with a decision, or at least we see the process of thoughts as he sits thinking about this decision about the blackmail proposition Jane has just thrown in front of him. And he does this while he's watching a documentary on elephants crossing a river. I didn't make this connection earlier, but in my review for the show and in this flashback, I've noted that this was something that he discusses in the future in Fly. Fly is an episode in season 3, the 10th episode of season 3. And you may remember it as the bottle episode where Walt is just stressed about this fly that comes into the super lab and he can't do any work until he cleanses the lab of this fly. But the episode Fly is really It's really a vehicle for carrying some philosophical thoughts about the show and about life and about what they're doing. And this documentary that Walt's watching right now in episode 12 of season 2 is Recollected in Fly. And we'll go through that after we review Fly in the near future coming up here. But it's interesting that Walt, getting back to this episode, Walt's done some contemplating here. First, we see him in the driveway when he comes home with the money, contemplating what it means and the birth of his baby daughter. And now he's contemplating, what does this all mean with this blackmail? So we see Walt slash Cranston struggle with these thoughts. And Cranston does a great job acting it. He just looks pained as he's watching this documentary that maybe all these problems aren't really quite solved. His health is better. His baby daughter is born. His money is here. But he's still got some things that are going to happen that are connected to having all this that he maybe hadn't thought of before. So even though Walt struggles with the decision and thinks about what it all means, he does deliver the money. He won't give the bag of cash to Jane, even though she grabs for it. He pulls it back and says, it's for Jesse. I'll hand it to Jesse. And as he does so, he says to Jesse, nice job wearing the pants.
Nice job wearing the pants. How do I know she'll keep quiet?
I guess you don't.
You'll never hear from either of us again.
You're not seeing straight, Jesse. You are making a mistake.
So the next scene is just a few little fantasy plays between Jane and Jesse about what this money means to them, the freedom it can buy, and how it can let them do whatever they want, go wherever they want. I don't really quite understand how it allows them to be whatever they want. You don't automatically just get to be a bush pilot in New Zealand. You can go there, but you still have to earn a few things to become these things. But that's their plan, go away to some dreamy, nice new place and be happy forever with this $480,000. But they also stipulate that they have to be clean. They have to get clean and do this on their own and not because somebody else tells them to or wants them to. And they walk into the bedroom and see the drug paraphernalia. And we see how powerful addiction really is, because it's really got control over them more so than them over it. And then Walt, this was a scene at the time that seemed a little bit hard to reconcile, but Walt goes into a bar, still thinking, and this is all weighing on him, all this getting money, getting a baby, getting it blackmailed, giving it away, wondering what's going to happen. He's supposed to be out getting diapers for Holly, but he makes a quick stop at a bar. And in that bar is Jane's father. So you can accept this coincidence or not, but it is it's an interesting way to get Walt into a conversation with Donald, Jane's father. It's probably worth the suspension of belief to enjoy this conversation that Walt has with Jane's father. This is the first of a couple coincidences that seem to be a little hard to believe, but it's worth it, I think. They talk about having been dads or being dads. The conversation turns to daughters and Jane and Holly, and how kids are both wondrous and troublesome. And Walt asks Donald for daughterly advice, and he tells him, love them, they are who they are. And so Jesse comes into play as Walt's nephew later on in the conversation. And it's an interesting crossroad for him and them both, using Jesse as the nephew, because Jesse, of course, is involved with Jane, and we know he's involved with Walt. But this phantom nephew won't listen to advice, and so what do you do with someone like that? And Donald says, you can't give up on them. Walt may already know this, but even if he does already know it, I think it kind of solidifies it for him. I remember thinking at the time, another thing I really like about the show is it's being written by somebody who understands culture and who likes the things I like. There's a really cool old kind of hillbilly rock song playing in this bar. It's by the band The Outlaws, and it's Green Grass and High Tides Forever. Green Grass and High Tides is the title of the song, but it's this really cool Western country slash rock song. And I know Vince Gilligan probably really liked this song and he put it in there, and I really liked the song too. So remember at the time just thinking, this show is being written by somebody I could be a friend with who likes the things I like and is probably listens to the music I like and likes to do the things I like. Anyway, that was playing in the bar, so that's a little side note to the episode. Walt and Donald's conversation continues on with Walt thinking or saying you can't live their life for them. It's really frustrating. Frustration is a factor in having children. You can just do what's best for them and hope for the rest. Do what you can to do to set them up for the best for them, but then hope for the best. And that hope is frustrating. It's another statement on control, I think, of Walt / Heisenberg, that you can't be in control of everything. And it's a shared frustration with Donald. He can't control Jane. He can only set her up and try to guide her through the pathways that will lead her to being happy and free from these drugs. But he can't make her not be a drug addict. The result of all this conversation and thought process at this bar, though, leads Walt to go back to Jesse's house. I believe that's why he went back to Jesse's house. He's probably thinking that he needs to either apologize or clarify and just talk to Jesse. Walt is a father figure to Jesse. He's a good guy at this point in the show, and it really felt like he was a good guy. And this may be short-lived because of what happens in the next 60 seconds, but Walt goes there and knocks on the door and there's no answer, so he peeks in the window and he sees them asleep. He's bent on talking to Jesse, though, because he goes in through that back door that's broken and awakens Jesse, jiggles him a little bit, and Jane rolls over on her side and a minute later starts to choke. She coughs up some vomit and she starts to choke on it. And Walt watches her die and lets her die. And she asphyxiates the way that we saw, you know, you prevent babies from doing. And Jane was careful to position Jesse so that he wouldn't do it. Well, it happens to her because she vomits and asphyxiates on it. And Walt watches her die. And it's an interesting part of the story. In the original script, Walter was supposed to enter this apartment and shoot Jane up with an extra dose of heroin to purposefully kill her. And at the time, Cranston said that the scene with Jane affected him as a father, that it was really difficult for him to film, but it was also one of his favorite scenes. Cranston does a great job of portraying a father viewing this. He's a very, very evil / emotional / I don't know what father. He's a father protecting his son, but he's a father seeing a girl die after he had just had a conversation with another father talking about daughters, and he's just become a new father of a daughter. So Cranston manages all these emotions, and it's just a great scene. I don't know what else to say about it. I noticed in the rewatch that as Jane dies, she's laying there for a moment, but as she actually dies, her eyes open up and appear to look right at Walter. And Walter, when this happens, looks away and covers his face. He can't bear to watch her looking at him in her moment of death. And as he covers his eyes or covers his mouth and looks away, a tear comes from his eyes. And then we get that ceiling point of view shot that was just so dreamy and erotic a few moments ago or a few episodes ago, where Jesse had his first heroin high and drifted up. We see that shot now down onto Jane having passed away and Jesse lying unconscious in his drug high. And it's not so glamorous this time. I think in the name game, the reason for this show being called Phoenix, I'm not sure of this, but Phoenix is the, I'm not sure this is the reason. In the next episode, it's revealed that Phoenix is where Jane is born. When we see the events of the next episode reveal that the facts about Jane being collected by the police and paramedics as they attend to her, that Donald tells them that Jane was born in Phoenix. Saul is not in the final episode, ABQ, of season two, but we will talk about it a little bit here because it's an important part of the show. Saul does, he is part of a phone call in this episode, but he does not appear in this episode. ABQ is the 13th episode of season two. You may remember it. It's the culmination of those clues that the writers had put into the titles. And 737, Down, and Over are now completed with this title, ABQ. 737, Down, Over, ABQ. And we see in the beginning the preview of the episode, more clues about this this event that's happened around the pool. The NTSB people are loading items collected from the pool now into a van. And we see the van drive away, and then we see the pillars of smoke, the two giant smoke pillars coming off the distance over Walt's neighborhood. And we're going to see in this episode that the result of everything cluing us into this is that the plane crash has happened. Two planes have crashed due to Donald's negligence on his job as the air traffic controller. One important thing we need to talk about in this episode, too, even though Saul's not appearing in it, is one of Saul's efforts to add to the show has appeared in it, and that's Mike. Mike Ehrmantraut is introduced in this episode. I remember him as one of my favorite characters, and watching him leave the show was one of the hardest points of watching Breaking Bad. But we'll see this introduction to Mike in episode 13 of season 2. Mike is needed because he's the cleanup man for Saul, and he helps Jesse deal with the aftermath of the overdose and death of Jane in Jesse's apartment. So the episode starts with Jesse frantically trying to bring Jane back, and of course he fails. And he calls Walt, Walt continuing on in the fatherly paternal role here, assures him that everything's going to work out. While he's holding Holly, the baby, in his arms. But Walt then gets a hold of Saul, and Saul has Mike come and help Jesse straighten this out. But Walt says the words, "I know who to call." And of course, we know Better Call Saul.
Slow down. Now just take a deep breath. Do it. All right. Now what happened? All right. Now. Listen to me. Are you listening? Everything is going to be okay, I promise. No, listen, calm down. Just sit tight. I know who to call.
Now, during this phone call, Walt's holding baby Holly, and he is reliving this death of Jane. Just see him. He kind of folds into... He's standing up with Holly, talking on the phone, and then he just collapses into a chair holding Holly and continues the conversation on the phone. And you can tell he's the father now. He's the father reliving the death, watching Jane die. And he just collapses and offers his advice to do the best he can to maybe help keep Jesse out of trouble and maybe ease some of the pain that he's feeling. And this interaction with Walt as a father, even though he's let the child of a father die, shows him being concerned for Jesse as a father in the paternal role. Anyway, that's how I took it. But this is how we get introduced to Mike and Mike's character. He's totally in control. He's the cleaner. You know, he's going to take away the drug paraphernalia and the cash, by the way. I wondered at the time if that was part of the cost of having Mike become involved, was that he gets to keep this cash. But we see soon what his role is. And he's a very disciplined professional criminal, clearing away all this evidence and then teaching Jesse how he needs to act in the next few minutes to escape prosecution from anybody or anything. He schools him in what he needs to say, makes him rehearse it. And when Jesse's appears to be inattentive and just drifting away, he slaps him back into the present.
Any other drugs in the house? Think hard. Your freedom depends on it. What about guns? You got any guns in the house? Here's your story. You woke up. You found her. That's all you know. Say it. Say it, please. I woke up. I found her. That's all I know. Say it. I woke up. I found her. That's all I know.
I woke up. I found her. That's all I know.
Again.
I woke up. I found her. That's all I know.
Again. Again.
I woke up. I found her. That's all I know. I woke up, I found her, that's all I know.
Once you call it in, the people who show up will be with the Office of Medical Investigations. That's primarily who you'll talk to. Police officers may arrive, they may not. Depends on how busy a morning they're having. Typically, ODs are not a high priority call. There's nothing here to incriminate you, so I'd be amazed if you got placed under arrest. However, if you do, you say nothing. You tell them you just want your lawyer, and you call Saul Goodman.
And the minute I saw this scene with Mike, I remember wanting to see more of Mike. I was hoping that he would become part of the series, and they'd find a way to work him into different situations, and of course, they do. Other events in episode 13 are that at the DEA office, there's some interesting stuff with Hank. He is he's doing a review of the crimes. He's put up all the scene of all the pictures of all the people that are involved, Combo and Crazy Eight, and you know, some people that the guy that got arrested on purpose and Tuco. He's got these guys all pinned up on his bulletin board, and the facts of everything just aren't adding up to Hank. It's a bigger deal than it appears for this small street-level, the street-level characters that are participating and the quality of the meth and all this stuff. So he's got his suspicions are really on super high alert. Also, the meth has disappeared from their area. It's all around them now, but it's not in ABQ anymore. And the blue sky, as he's calling it, the blue meth is all around them in the surrounding states. Of course, we know this to be true now because Gus has received this big shipment and taken all of the production from Walt and Jesse and is now distributing it through his Los Pollos network to all the states around the ABQ. He's distributing it in the correct way, you know, not distributing it where it's coming from. Anyway, Hank's questioning all this and trying to figure out these facts, and he's convinced that the real Heisenberg is not this clown that they caught, but that the real Heisenberg is still at large. In other scenes, Junior's website is cranking in some money. It's not a huge amount of money yet, but it's a couple $1,000s. So even though we haven't seen Saul set up this input of money from the zombie computers, it appears to be that's what's happening. I guess we could see $2,800 or $3,000 happening just by the merits of Junior's work on the website, but that website looks pretty amateurish and pretty poorly done. And I don't know how much time's gone by, but a few $1,000s seems like a lot to happen just on the merits of that website alone. So I'm guessing that, and I still don't actually know the answer to this, but I think Saul has introduced this character with the zombie website to get the to pump in the money through Junior. We see some really sad scenes about Donald picking out Jane's funeral arrangements and setting that all up, and that's very sad, and it's hard to watch it again, actually. But it's what happens between Donald. We haven't yet seen this plane crash, so it's setting it all up for his demise as an air traffic controller, where he can't bear the weight of this loss of his daughter, leading to this coincidental plane crash. Planes crashing right over Walt's neighborhood and literally over at his house, enough to where debris falls into the pool. It was a little bit hard to believe, but things are spinning out of control and breaking bad, and this is another person caught up in that. And these are the results of it. But we haven't seen this crash yet, so we, at this point, see some sad scenes about Donald picking out Jane's funeral clothes and setting up this last thing he can do for his daughter. The one evidence of Saul in episode 13 is Walt calling him and demanding that he tells him where Jesse's located. And so Mike drives Walt out to this old crappy house called a shooting gallery. It's a crappy neighborhood. Mike counsels Walt not to even go inside. It's too dangerous. Walt does go inside, of course. He's in this paternal mode still, but he helps Jesse get to his feet. And Jesse just clings to Walt, telling him how he thinks he killed her and how he loved Jane more than anything. The website, the whole website thing spins a little bit out of control because Marie gets the newspaper people involved, and ultimately, I guess, the TV people. A couple other interesting things. We see Hank's boss, Merker, introduce him to Gus. And Gus even makes a small donation in Hank's jar for Walt's cancer fund. The big thing that happens is when Walt goes in for his surgery, Skylar asks him about the phone, where his cell phone is, and Walt, in his pre-surgery drug anesthesia, tells her or asks her which one. So she knows something's up now with these two phones that he's denied having. And later on, we see in this episode that Walt's surgery has been successful. He's bought some time, and Skylar asks when Walt can be independent. And this looked suspicious at the time because it looked like Skylar was going to be putting some distance between her and Walt. And that's, in fact, what she does. In a later scene, we see Skylar tell Walt that she's going to Marie and Hank's for the weekend and that she wants him to move out. She knows he's a liar. And the two cell phones, I think, was the biggest part of that. She admits going to Gretchen, who denied having any part in the participation of funding this money for Walt's treatment. And she's called his mother. She just has figured out that all the things that have been happening have been lies coming from Walt. And the plane crash happens because Jane's father calls the aircraft Jane Mike 21 instead of Juliet Mike 21. And he's just being weighed down by this grief and trying to correct his error. The radar screen shows the two planes coming together, and that's it. The planes crash, and Walt sees this, and that's it for season two. We see a lot of stuff happen here. We see the end of Jane, but the introduction to Mike, and Mike's going to be a great character in the show coming up. We see that Saul has really entrenched himself into this plot now, that he's helping them as an attorney, but he's helping them introduce new lines of escapades that they can become involved in, and he's a criminal himself in this enterprise now. In the upcoming season for Better Call Saul, it'll be interesting to see how he breaks bad. Does he have a big cataclysmic event, or does he do it slowly? Was he a little criminal all along and he got bigger and bigger? So the evolution of Saul is just going to be really interesting to find out and see if it parallels how he acted in Breaking Bad. If you have any questions about Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul and want to connect with me, you can reach me on Twitter at @scathingtweets or send me an email at support@westcoastproject.com. And you can always connect up with us on our website, westcoastproject.com. And for Better Call Saul, we have a Facebook page, Facebook.com/Better Call Saul Podcast. So feel free to connect either way, and thanks for listening.
Say we adore you as kings and queens.